Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We like all the great stuff that you're doing to support your community. Thanks for doing that. We appreciate it. This program is sponsored in part by the Seafarers International Union and also the Maritime Trades, and we appreciate their support. Joining me right now from the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, we've got Rick Bloomingdale, President. Rick, welcome back.
Charles, it's always a pleasure to be on the show.
Rick, thanks for being with us today. Short notice, and I appreciate being with us. Hey, a number of things are going on today. We were just talking with Jerry Oleksiak and Butch Santacolo about some of the shenanigans that some of our friends in the state legislature are trying to pull against teachers. You know, I mean, my God, taking sick days away from teachers,
yeah.
Really?
Right. It's quite the attack on workers, and they seem to find every way they can. And I don't know if Jerry and Butch pointed it out, but it just the sheer sort of hypocrisy of, for one thing, saying, well, you know, the school code says that you can have a certain number of sick days and vacation and a couple other things, and their argument there is, well, we believe that teachers should negotiate for those things. And then the very next day, they vote on a bill taking away workers' rights to negotiate dues deduction in their contracts. So if anybody ever thought that they might be honest about their intentions about, well, we just want to make it fair, it's clearly anti-labor, because either you're for collective bargaining and for all issues to be collectively bargained, or you're for none of them to be collectively bargained. And they fall on the side of, even though they've said they want to eliminate school day sick days for teachers by giving it to the to let the school districts bargain it, you know, this is just another attack on workers, and that's all it is. And, you know, they're going to keep doing it. They know that unions are the only firewall between the middle class and them having everything, and they want everything.
Right.
Their greed is unbounded.
Rick, let me ask you a question. You know, when they toss this one out there and they toss, you know, the next one out there and the other one out there, and they come up with all of these things that are just silly. I did not realize that the Pennsylvania State Education Association offered to pay the expense to the state for dues deduction
Right, as has AFSCME, and actually it's in when they did started when they negotiated the ability to ask people to, you know, make a voluntary contribution through to their PAC. AFSCME gave the Commonwealth a letter and said, look, you know, we don't want we need to pay you for this, and send us a bill. They're still waiting for that first bill, and that's under Tom Ridge. It's under Ed Rendell. It's under Tom Corbett. It's just so minuscule that, you know, it's not even worth doing. It would cost the Commonwealth more to figure out how to do it or how much it costs than it is to actually do, because
right.
They do all kinds of payroll deductions, right? They do United Way. They do, obviously, all our taxes. Each municipality has to have a separate code. And so the amount of time spent on finding out what it would cost is much more valuable than the actual the amount of money it would take
right.
to do the dues deduction.
These kinds of things continue. I mean, you know, 166, 167 here in the state of Pennsylvania deals with dues deduction, and then enshrining it in the state constitution.
Well, and that, you know, we had actually a little bit more success with that bill than we did with 166, which passed out of the state Senate 28-22. As folks may know, the Republicans have 34 votes to the Democrats 16, so we got six Republicans to vote with us, you know, basically saying that this is wrong. A union should have the right to negotiate dues deduction. The constitutional amendment, they never brought it up for a vote because we suspect, we don't know for sure, but we suspect that they didn't have the votes, that there were, we had heard that some legislators on the Republican side of the aisle had said, look, I may not agree with whether or not unions have the right to do this, but it shouldn't be in the Constitution. We shouldn't be cluttering up the Constitution with every little pet peeve that we have. And that was pretty much a slap in the face to Senator Wagner, you know, who wants to use the Constitution as his own personal sort of enemies list. And so it was they never brought that one up, although they did pass 166, which now go to the state house where we'll continue to fight it. And hopefully we'll do as well as New Hampshire did today. We'll get 30 Republicans to cross the aisle and side with us on 166. That would give us enough votes to defeat it outright. And as you may have heard, Charles, New Hampshire, they tried to bring up right to work. Mm-hmm. We had 30 Republicans side with all the Democrats and defeat right to work in New Hampshire today, which is a huge victory for labor.
Rick, I got to tell you a little backstory on that. As a veteran, you know, I do the Union Edge, but I also do on Fridays a program called Vets Voice Radio. Because of that, we're working with our friends with Stars and Stripes, the GI newspaper, daily newspaper that's printed overseas in Europe and Asia and elsewhere. And one of the articles in it was talking very specifically about veterans standing up in and saying that right to work is wrong in that state.
That's exactly right, because they get it, right? I mean, veterans, look, you guys, and I'm not a veteran. I remember it because I grew up in a military family, and we used to get it when we were stationed in Germany. But you know, as a veteran, the people you trust the most are the people you fight with side by side or stand
right.
with or train with side by side. So being a military person, you get the idea of collective action. A soldier on his own isn't going to survive as long as a group, a battalion on there together.
Right.
So it's all about fighting together. And that's really what the labor movement is, right? It's all about solidarity, people banding together to fight for their rights. So I get it that veterans get it. I mean, they are trained and relying on each other. The day you get to boot camp, right? It's all about working together.
Right. It's all about the team. And quite frankly, that's one of the reasons why the transition from military service to the building trades or other union organizations is such an easy transition for them, because they get it. They know that the people who've been there longer are looking out for their well-being and their interests. So it's a great thing all the way around. But, Rick, what I want to say is, you know, we have these politicians that continually just keep coming up with these knuckleheaded ideas. It's partisan. And like you said, some of them, it's even how do I harm Americans? Or in Pennsylvania, how do I harm Pennsylvanians? What's the easiest way? And that's what they're doing. They're harming Americans, or they're harming Pennsylvanians. And this has got to stop.
And that's exactly right, Charles. And I don't, you know, for Senator Eichelberger, who introduced Senate Bill 166, I would bet that the vast majority of his constituents have no idea what paycheck deception is. And if he and I sat down and explained it to them, you know, one of the insidious things about it is they said, "Oh, we're only saying you can't deduct the political part of dues." But then they go define lobbying as political part. Now, I know a lot of people think that's a bad word, but all it really means is that somebody goes and talks to their legislator about an issue that's important to them.
Right. So, that's redressing.
You know.
Yeah. Okay. And without getting into the weeds, what we're talking about is white hat lobbying. We're not talking about walking into somebody's office with a big check. What we're talking about is walking into somebody's office and having that conversation and explaining why, you know, if cars have their headlights on in a construction zone on the turnpike, it saves lives.
That's right. And those are the kinds of things that we lobby on every day, right? Health and safety rules and fairness on the job and, you know, different kinds of things, and minimum wage and things that help people. And they would want, And they know. I mean, the business community knows that if we're, because we're lobbying, we're the ones pushing for minimum wage, even though it doesn't affect a large number of union members. I mean, it will, because, you know, if you lift, if somebody right now is making $13, $14 in a union shop, which they could be as a beginner, you know, in that shop, as a new employee in that shop, you know, the minimum wage goes up to $12. That employer, that gives us, you know, we can say, look, we got the skills. We should be making $16 an hour. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, you know, that minimum wage, that, you know, we set that floor a little bit higher. That's going to raise a lot of people's wages. So it right. does have an indirect impact on union wages and for the good. But, you know, those are the kinds of issues we lobby for. And for them to try to define politics or a lobbying as politics is just wrong. It, basically, they want to shut us up, right? They don't right, want us right. to have any money to hire lobbyists or pay for a bus to come to the, to Harrisburg to lobby legislators, right? That,
right.
that would fall under the category of lobbying. Or when we go up and we lobby for, you know, more funding for United Ways and literacy and making it easier, helping people get services, you know, for the mentally ill and the and mentally incapacitated, you know, folks who have issues. You know, we're fighting for all kinds of issues, and you know, this attempt to silence us is we're going to expose it and we're going to try to beat it, because that's what it is. It's really, you know, like I said, we're the last. The labor movement's the last firewall between. The 1% becoming smaller, but having more. Instead of having 50% of the wealth in America, they want 75% of the wealth mm-hmm. in America. Hell, they'd want it all. One thing I've learned about millionaires and billionaires, they never get enough.
Yeah.
You know, they always want more.
And there's always another Cancun where they can stick it in a bank.
But. Right. And, you know, most of us, like you and I and most of the people out there, look, you know, we go to work to make our lives, our family lives a little better, to help, you know, be involved in our schools. And, you know, we're not the, and that's probably why, you know, we're not billionaires or millionaires. We, you know, we don't have that mindset that I got, that grasping, greedy mindset that I got to have it all. I mean, we think different. We think about our families and, you know, what's enough. You know, do I really need six houses or six cars or six of everything because I can? You know, we really don't. What do I need to make my family safe and secure and healthy?
Yeah.
That's what we go to work, and that's what the vast majority of people go to work for. But we've gotten legislators who've decided that they're going to fight for the super wealthy and make them even richer. The sad part is, once those rich folks get tired of these legislators, they'll dump them, because they're never going to be in that class. They're just right. tools for the super wealthy to use to get their way. I mean,
right.
the Koch brothers are perfect. They're manipulating guys like Eichelberger and Wagner. Even though Wagner's a millionaire, he's never going to be a billionaire. You know, they just manipulate those guys to get more for them and less for the rest of us.
Right. And when it's all said and done, they're going to be left on the scrap heap just like everybody else. And that's one of the darndest things in the world for me, that, you know, we can see that, you know, these people that are pushing coal and oil and other, you know, other things that are doing damage to the environment. What do they think they're going to do? Live in a dome? You know, I don't get it. You know, we're all in this together. And, you know, when union folks do well in the community, or even non-union folks do well in the community, like, you know, the Fight for 15. You know, those people working in the fast food joints or in other places making $15 an hour instead of riding the bus to work may go down the street to that used car dealership and buy a car.
Exactly.
You know, so these are the kinds of things that that we should be talking about, and these are the kinds of things that we should be supporting. And you know, I don't get it. I mean, how can you be a politician and stand there and be willing to harm your constituents for some carpetbagger coming in out of state writing a check?
That's exactly right. And, you know, you mentioned oil and gas, and those are great jobs, and you know that we're trying to develop that as safely as possible to make sure that people, you know, have those good jobs. And they're usually union jobs, right? Once they get the wells drilled, and like the pipeline workers, right, all good union jobs, strong union jobs. So those are the kinds of things. Obviously, we want to do it safe. We want to be healthy. But, you know, people need energy. And those are the kinds of things that, you know, we're going to fight for. But, you know, you got the Koch brothers who would rather have it done all non-union, dangerous, who would just as soon poison us or have an explosion. And that's why we fight for the union right to organize and be on those jobs to make sure that, you know, when we build those pipelines and to bring that gas so that people can light up their homes and, you know, make sure that when it gets hot, the air conditioning comes on. When it gets cold, the heat comes on. You know, we got to make sure that those jobs are done safe, and they're done safe when they're done union. So we got a real strong, you know, we want an energy secure future in Pennsylvania, and we'll fight to have those jobs be unionized. And, you know, that's the kind of thing. And to for those folks to pay their fair share. That's why, you know, we support Governor Wolf's severance tax. Look, those folks are taking a resource out of the ground that belongs to all the Pennsylvanians. We're a commonwealth. And, you know, look, they're going to help light our homes, heat our homes, and all that stuff. But they should be paying a severance tax like every other energy-producing state in the country. Even Texas, Alaska, North Dakota, all have a severance tax. And for us not to have one to help fund our schools and do all the kinds of things we need to do, that's a travesty, and we need to get that severance tax, a reasonable tax, passed.
Right. Yeah, and are we making any headway on that?
Well, you know, the governor put it in his budget again. And there are certainly folks on both sides of the aisle who would like to see something done in a fair way. So I'm hoping, and you know, look, people want government services, and you don't get something for nothing. You know, we want our roads, we want our schools to be the best schools we have. We want to make sure that they get the funding that's necessary so our kids get the best education. We want to make sure those schools are built safe and built union. So we need money to do those things. Government can't exist on its own. And, you know, businesses used to pay 30% of the entire state budget. They're now down about 15% because we cut out the capital stock and franchise tax. Governor Corbett gave them any number of big tax breaks. And, you know, now, look, they benefit from those tax dollars, right? The roads we build and the bridges we repair and the schools that we have. Every business that comes to PA gets a benefit from being in PA, and they get clean water, they get the infrastructure they need, they get the workers they need because our schools are good, but they're not going to be good if we don't fund them.
Right.
And they got to pay their fair share, and so far they haven't been, and we need to ask those businesses to kick it up and pay their fair share.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and again, these are things that the residents of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania understand, and they're willing to pay it. You know, I've got a neighbor; she hasn't had a kid in any of the public schools in 30 or 40 years, but she still pays her school taxes because, you know what? Well, you know, you got to, but I mean, she's got no problem with it because she knows that somebody paid for her kids when they went through.
Well, and not only that, look, if you're a senior citizen and wouldn't it be much better to have the kids in schools learning how to, you know, be a good, productive citizen and be a smart person and going to school rather than going to jail, you then get people into a life of crime? I mean, investing in schools is actually investing in the citizenry. You know, and it is look, I don't use the schools anymore. My kids are grown and out of school. But damn, I want my neighbor's kids who are younger, you know, my newer neighbors or have young kids, I want their kids to have the same opportunities mine did. So I absolutely don't mind paying school taxes because it lifts us all up and it makes us all safer because those kids will be in school and not in jail.
Absolutely.
So it's that working together. It's a team. We're citizens together. We're not all individuals who do our own thing. I didn't homeschool my kids. I was willing to pay to have somebody else teach them. And taught them well, by the way.
Right.
So I'm happy to do that.
Rick, as we're moving forward, you know, let's face it, numbers of new union members in Pennsylvania is coming up, which is a good thing. You know, we've got people that are energetic and activated and moving forward. You don't have the legislature in session right now, but we've still got work to do. What should we be doing out in the field?
Well, they may not be in Harrisburg, although they will be back for committee hearings and those kind of things, but it means they're in their district offices. Folks need to go see them, and I know, actually it's not on our website yet, but it will be pretty soon. There are going to be a number of rallies around the state at Congress and Toomey's office over Obamacare and making sure that we make sure that we protect the benefits of Obamacare, our kids being able to stay on until they're 26, can't deny us for pre-existing conditions. So folks need to participate in those town halls. They need to show up. They need to ask those questions to Congress. What happened? Is my kid going to be able to stay on? Am I still going to be able to get an income subsidy because otherwise they can't afford insurance? They need to do that. But then on our local issues, the state issues, Senate Bill 166 is in the House. Visit your legislator while they're at home. Most of them keep office hours from 9 to 5 or 8 to 5. I don't know all of them. But stop by that local office and tell that legislator or their staff that you're opposed to Senate Bill 166, that they shouldn't move it. I wish I could remember the seniority bill or the school code bill. But tell them, you know, look, teachers have this in the school code, right to sick days. They should protect that. Just stop in. Go those things. You can find information about our issues on our website or on our Facebook page or on Twitter. You can find all that stuff out. If you go to our website, www.paaflcio.org, you can find a link to our Facebook page and our Twitter account and Instagram. So jump on, find out about the issues, find out what you should be talking to your legislator about. But take the time, you know, on your lunch hour. Or, you know, I wish they kept evening hours because we have a lot of people who work who,
right,
you know, would like to go see them. And some of them may, and some of them actually even have Saturday hours. Stop in, see them, write them a letter, call them up, whatever you can do, let them know that you're in the state level, you're opposed to Senate Bill 166. Federal level, get in there, talk about Obamacare and the benefits of. Look, were there problems with Obamacare? Sure. But we need to fix those problems, just like there were problems with Medicare initially and Social Security. You know, it took us a lot of years to work on those and get them fixed. So nothing's perfect. We got to make it better. So get in there and talk to your legislator. Say fix it, don't repeal it. I appreciate all the good work that you do, Charles, on your radio show, informing folks. That's one of the things that makes this country so great, right? We have the ability to speak out in many different ways.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, Rick, we appreciate your support and the support of the PAAF of LCIO. Rick, it's always a pleasure. How do we find out more about the PAAFL?
Well, one good thing is repetition. I'll say it again. Our website, www.paaflcio.org. You can link to our Facebook page or Twitter account or Instagram. And find out, keep up with us, find out all about us at those areas.
There you go. And we appreciate that, and we'll talk to you again soon. Rick Bloomingdale, President of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.